Trigger warning. This case deals with violence against a child.
This is the Crimecasters Network with Alicia Sophias and Ronnie Dahl, two rogue reporters breaking newsroom rules to take you behind the crime scene tape.
Cheers, Crimecasters. Today's case sent fear through a small community after a beautiful little girl was kidnapped and buried alive.
Detectives have chased down over 2,000 leads through the years, but there still has been no arrest for the murder of 5-year-old Nevaeh Buchanan. Her disappearance made national headlines in 2009. People across the country all asking, how can a little girl just vanish? 12 years later, parents in Moreau, Michigan still hold their kids a little closer and hug them a little tighter as they continue to look and wonder, who is the monster that lives among them? Will he ever be caught? Will there ever be justice for Nevaeh?
Let's go back to the last day Nevaeh was seen alive. Summer is just getting started. It's Memorial Day weekend. This is the most exciting time for kids. And it's no exception at the Charlotte Arms apartment building, where the children are all outside playing. Now, Nevaeh has a new best friend, Austin. His family lives upstairs. And just before 6 o'clock that Sunday night, Nevaeh's mom, Jennifer, is watching TV. And Nevaeh shouts, "Hey, I'm going to play with Austin." And I know what you're thinking. Why was a 5-year-old going out of the house by herself? But, Ronnie, I have to remind myself that my best friend Mikey lived next door, and I used to run off and play with him all the time. We would play at all hours of the morning, noon, and night. And I was only in kindergarten, so I guess this isn't crazy.
It really isn't. As little kids, we did the same thing. I grew up in a very small town, but still, it was a question all of us reporters on the scene asked as well. And we were told it just wasn't unusual for the kids in the complex to run from one apartment to the other. They all played together. The complex, by the way, is small. It's just over 100 units, and it's laid out kind of like a horseshoe with a courtyard and a pool in the middle. So I was out there not too long ago, and the name is being changed right now, but the layout is still the same. So I'll put the video up on our social media just so everyone out there can get more of a visual of the layout of the apartment complex, because I do think it's important to this case. Now, Nevaeh was gone for about 30 minutes when another little girl went to her apartment and told her mom, Jennifer, Nevaeh was outside riding her scooter in the parking lot.
So she was kind of being like a tattletale, because that was a no-no at the time. She wasn't supposed to be outside. So Jennifer went outside to scold her daughter, but when she got there, she saw the scooter, but no Nevaeh. At first, she thought maybe her little girl was playing with a friend in another apartment or wandered to the school playground, which was just adjacent to the complex. When she still couldn't find her and the neighbors hadn't seen her, we're talking it's about 8 o'clock now, it's time to call police. Officers get there within minutes. And once it gets dark, the search really intensifies. There are helicopters and canine units. At 12:30 a.m., Michigan State Police make the decision to issue an Amber Alert.
At this time, police don't know if Nevaeh just wandered off, maybe she was hurt, or the worst-case scenario, she had been kidnapped. They are getting so much conflicting information, especially from the kids who were outside playing at the time. One kid said she was taken into the woods with a guy with a knife. Another said they saw her get into a green van. Law enforcement is just trying to make sense out of all of the information. Decipher fact from fiction. Then the case takes a very strange twist. Monday, Memorial Day, not even 24 hours later, two registered sex offenders, George Kennedy and Roy Lee Smith, are taken into custody for violating their probations. But they're no strangers. They are friends of Nevaeh's mom, Jennifer.
Now, Jennifer didn't actually even have custody of Nevaeh. Her mom, Sherry, did, which is Nevaeh's grandmother. Jennifer only came to live with them recently after getting out of prison in 2006. According to court documents, she was convicted of first-degree home invasion. She was supporting a drug habit at the time and serving time for that. Get this. While at the parole office, Jennifer meets George and they start dating. Roy Lee Smith is George's buddy. Police get warrants to search George's motel room and Roy's van, where they find a bloody towel and bloody tools. They test them immediately. Many are thinking the worst. But the DNA tests come back, and it is not Nevaeh's blood, thank God. Jennifer takes a lot of heat in the community during this time for allowing registered sex offenders to be around her daughter, and rightly so, in my opinion. She defends George, though, saying she didn't even know he was a registered sex offender when she met him. But, Ronnie, didn't she meet him at the parole office? So, I mean, anyway, she says she never left Nevaeh alone with George and Roy, so it must be okay.
I remember when news broke about the potential evidence in George's motel room and
all the blood of
the media, we were scrambling.
I bet.
I was out there and you were scrambling. And as a reporter, you call every single person you may know that could know something about a case such as this. And that's when really the attention started to shift to Jennifer. So she is questioned at length several times, but at the end of the day, police find no reason to arrest her. And during the investigation, another name surfaces, James Easter. He's a 64-year-old man known to hang out around the Charlotte Arms apartment complex. He's brought into the sheriff's department for questioning, but he's released. And almost immediately after going home, neighbors spot him burning stuff in a backyard fire pit.
Odd behavior and suspicious, highly suspicious. You just got home from being questioned. So police go back. They search his house. They remove bags of evidence. But it turns out Easter is odd, but police say not their killer. The evidence was porn. He was burning his X-rated magazine collection back there. Easter is charged with a misdemeanor for the fire, technically preparing to burn property less than $200. So why was he at the apartment complex? Well, turns out he was visiting a lady friend, someone he dated on and off again, who happened to live at that complex. What a lucky girl. But it's another dead end for law enforcement.
Nevaeh's disappearance becomes a multi-jurisdictional investigation with local, state, and federal agencies all working together. Thousands of people join in on the search for Nevaeh. It was the first time I have covered a search of that magnitude, and I have to say it was extremely organized. Volunteers would arrive, and then they would check in at the parking lot of a nearby Kmart. There, they were assigned to a group that would search a specific area, like in a grid pattern. We've seen that before. It's really not an easy task, though, because while Monroe is not a big city, it's just about 20,000 people, the surrounding area is vast with a lot of woods and a lot of farms. Dive teams were also brought in to search a nearby quarry. It was a massive undertaking. Volunteers showed up day after day, still hopeful, always hopeful, Nevaeh would be found.
But 11 days later, on June 4th, all of that hope shattered when two fishermen make a horrific discovery. It was Nevaeh's body, but encased in cement, dumped on the bank of the River Raisin. The medical examiner confirmed the worst. She had suffocated from inhaling dirt. According to the official report, it was possible she had been buried alive.
How could this happen? Who would do such a thing to an innocent child? So many questions, and the person who wants answers and deserves answers more than anyone, Nevaeh's dad, Shane Hinosa. We haven't heard a lot from him because he wasn't a part of Nevaeh's life, but he tells me it wasn't because he didn't want to be. He was only 17 when Nevaeh was born, and he and Jennifer had a rocky relationship from the get-go. But Nevaeh was his firstborn child. He wanted to be a father to her, but he says the Buchanan family cut him out of her life. We are going to hear from him next.
You're listening to Crimecasters Network.
What were those days like until they found her body?
A lot of sleepless nights. A lot of hate towards the whole Buchanan family for, you know, I don't know if he had anything to do with it, you know, but to allow a sexual predator to be around, there's a lot of hate and a lot of unanswered questions. And I just couldn't believe my ears once I heard about it. You know what I mean?
So since then, have you been able to put the pieces together?
What we heard the day we showed up is the apartment manager called 911. And when the police got there, you know,
it was an hour and a half after she had been missing. So she'd been missing at 6:30 and Maureen called the 911, I guess, at 8 o'clock. So Denny didn't even call 911. But then Maureen told us the day of the funeral, she took us upstairs to her apartment and said that she wanted to tell us that Denny left property with Nevaeh that day at 2 o'clock. And when Jenny came back to property, she didn't have Nevaeh. So there's so many different stories that we have been told over the years. You know, putting pieces together is just impossible because everybody has a different story. So to tell you if she was there, if she wasn't there, if she was riding her scooter, if she wasn't, I mean, you know, the one boy seen Daddy George take her out of the woods, you know, one seen a vehicle pick her up, the other one seen an ice cream truck. You know, there's so many different stories. You know, Jenny owed a drug debt. You know, if you watch the Nancy Grace with Jenny Cannon on it, she's defending this guy and saying that, well, first she's defending why she had him around him, but then she's saying that he might have had something to do with the abduction because he owed money to a drug dealer.
So the days go on and you're getting conflicting information. What is going through your mind? How are you handling this?
Back then, we were on a lot of drugs. I'm not going to lie. We were on drugs. So the drugs were keeping me awake. I just wanted to find her. You know, nothing was going through my head, but find her. I think out of the 13 days, I think they're a total of 6 hours of sleep. So I just wanted to find her and just bring her home and take her to the courtroom and show Pamela Moskwa, the damn judge that denied me, I want to take her home. She is safer with me. And that's what I told the court fighting for. She's safer with me.
Shane, when her body is found, how did you find out? What did law enforcement contact you?
They actually came to the apartment complex and
had us meet in Jenny's apartment. Had us come to Jenny's apartment.
I don't think we were all in Jenny's apartment. I think they went there first and we heard her scream. And then they came out and told us, they walked over to our little, I'm going to say camp, because we had a tent pitched up. And that's when they told us that the body was confirmed it was her. So, yeah, law enforcement did tell us that it was her.
Did they tell you right away how she was found and how they thought she died?
They didn't tell us right away, no. They just said that they found her in a shallow grave and we didn't find out exactly how she died until we got the death certificate. And that's when we found out it was asphyxiation. And there was sand in her lungs and pretty much she was buried alive.
So when you think about her last moments, how angry are you as her father, your first child?
To the point that I was, if I didn't have kids at the time, I would have probably be in prison right now, to be honest. Because I think I would have killed the whole family, to be honest. You know, whoever is in my way, they would have went down. you know, Sherry, Jenny, Mike, you know, Sean Lawson, the cousin, the whole family. I would have probably been in prison. But my kids are my savior because they need their dad out providing for them.
You've been to where her body was found. The memorial is beautiful. But can I ask you, what are your thoughts about the person who killed her? Because that location is so remote that I feel like it had to be someone from the area.
They said it was George Kennedy's favorite fishing spot because I guess his mom lived right down the street. I always thought that I'm not protecting him. I'm not, you know, talking good about him, but I always thought they tried to frame him, mm-hmm. you know, because they found a bag of cement from the company that he worked for. Cigarette butts, beer bottles. You know, I think somebody was trying to frame him. I think his ID. Yeah,
his ID was found somewhere around there.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was him or not. I can't tell you that. But I think somebody tried to frame him. And I don't know. I want to believe that Jenny had some involvement in it somehow. In my heart. I know that's probably what happened.
You want to remember her first moments and her happy moments.
And the last day that I can remember having her, Donnie and her stayed up until I'm going to say 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And it's like they ate 10 pounds of sugar. They just wanted to stay up, bounce and jump on the couches. And it was a good time. That's my last real good memory with her.
Continue the conversation with your hosts, Alicia and Ronnie, on any of your favorite social media platforms. Find us at Crimecasters and let's talk true crime.
This is a part of the show where we go off script and have the real conversations we have when we're actually covering this case. And Ronnie, I remember that no community has ever come together the way that I've ever seen in this case. This was just everyone lining up, doing the searches, and just so invested. I mean, emotional. I remember wasn't there some type of like ceremony during the funeral?
Well, what it was is Nevaeh loved motorcycles. So the community came together and they had a large procession of motorcycles that carried her hearse.
That's right.
And in some weird sense, Nevaeh became the city of Monroe and the county of Monroe's child as well. Everyone was invested in this little girl. They didn't know her, but they felt like they knew her.
Not only were they all looking for her, but when they found out the way she was killed, I think this took it up a notch. And not only was she Monroe's child and daughter, now they have a vested interest in catching the killer. So people all had a chip on their shoulder.
Well, because it's pretty certain at this point in time, it's someone from the area. Because of, number one, where she was taken. And the apartment complex is not off the highway. And it's that horseshoe shape that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So coming in and going out, people know who's in there and who's out of there. So they really, truly believe it was someone from the community and because of where her body was found. And Alicia, I remember going out, you know, because we do follow-ups as reporters, but when you're doing the follow-up, the location where she was found on the banks of the River Raisin, it was easier to find back then because there were so many cars and news trucks and this, that, and the other. I went back out a few months ago, and I couldn't find it. Like, I was like, I know I've been out
here. It's way out there.
It is so way out there, and I had to stop and to ask for directions a couple times from people through the neighborhood. So someone that lives down the street, their elderly mom was like, no, you won't find it. I'm going to take you there.
That really speaks to it, because everybody knows exactly where she was found. People, again, invested emotionally. I remember you saying a long time ago, police said they were close to an arrest. I mean, this was a while ago. What happened?
So this is hard, I think, not only for the community, but for the parents. Can you imagine? They keep saying, we're close to an arrest. We're close to
an
arrest.
What does that mean?
It's going to happen. And it's 12 years later.
Ugh.
It still hasn't happened. Shane pretty much says, no, he has no confidence in them at this time. Now, Moreau does have a new sheriff, but the person who is the sheriff now, he's been a part of the department for 30 years, so he knows his case well. And he does say, again, they're close to an arrest.
Great. So, that's real helpful for everyone.
And we won't. So I know that they can't talk about certain things,
right,
simply because the last thing you want to happen is that you jeopardize the case.
Right.
So we understand that. And no one wants that, because it's not just about making an arrest. It's about getting a conviction.
I agree. But there comes a time, and we've talked about this in cold cases before, I feel like there comes a time, especially when we're talking about such a heinous crime, where it's time to try something new. And what you're doing now doesn't seem to be working. Before we talk about that and debate the issue of whether they should name names, let's talk about these sex offenders, because my mind is blown when you see this beautiful little girl, a picture of Nevaeh, and you think that her mom was choosing her next boyfriend at the parole office. Shopping for boyfriends at the parole office. Listen, I can't wrap my head around that. I just can't. We have to bring the sex offenders in. We can't pretend like this doesn't matter, because we've seen time and time again, when there's a crime in a community, especially when it's a small community, and there's a kidnapping of a child, the first place they look is on the sex offender registry. Let's see in the vicinity where these guys lived.
And there are always cases or, you know, situations connected with why someone is on the sex offender registry. So we should say, Roy says he had consensual sex with someone underage, and then they later complained, or the parent complained, this, that, and the other. Doesn't matter. You're still on the list. But the unusual thing about this, they were named.
Right.
So if they are not charged, why name them? Typically how it works in law enforcement, so from my PIO days, the only time we could name a person of interest is if they were deemed a threat to society.
Right.
But in this case, they were locked up. So they were taken into custody on outstanding warrants, not connected to this. Now, since then,
yeah, where are they? Where are they now?
Right?
Where are they now? That's what I want to know. Where's George?
George Kennedy was released from prison in 2020.
Oh, not too long ago. Was it a pandemic release?
Probably.
Yeah.
Sources say he's moved out of the state.
Okay.
Now, according to the Michigan Sex Offender Registry, Roy Smith, he is in compliance and he still lives in the Moreau
area. That must be difficult.
But if they were connected, why are they not arrested? I don't think they had anything to do with it. I think,
yeah.
And Shane says as well, he thinks George was kind of the scapegoat. And there were things left at the scene that someone probably knew George, to make it look like him, like a specific beer can that, you know, they knew he'd drink that kind of beer or
cigarettes.
So the
sex offenders may have been framed by someone even worse. That's crazy. Now, a lot of people are probably asking, so Nevaeh, mom didn't have custody of Nevaeh at the time. Why was she watching her then? Was she watching her? Was grandma there also? Was she alone?
So the grandmother, Sherry, was actually working at the time.
Mm.
So in essence, you know, the mom,
was she allowed
Jennifer,
to watch her?
No, she wasn't. So Jennifer was basically babysitting her own kid, because her mom had custody. And that's one of the issues that Shane has, because he did try to get custody. And you're 17.
I know. It's so young.
And they fought for custody. And Sherry, the grandmother, got custody. She has since passed away. So, and she's really kind of been the face of, you know, the struggle to find the person responsible. Some people do believe that Jennifer could hold the key to the answers. She's been very quiet. I did reach out to her, never heard back. She, you know, works a job. She's still in the area, works at a factory, and just really is low profile about all of this.
It's hard to know what you would do if you were ever tragically in this situation, but I feel like I'd be out there waving flags. And if, you know, an investigator called me, I feel like I would be more than happy to, just like Shane, you know, I feel like him stepping up and coming forward, bringing this case new attention is what it needs sometimes. And I wish mom would do that.
There are some good things that came out of this, though. In so many tragedies, there was a person from Monroe, and she kind of started this Justice for Nevaeh. Now, the family says she's not connected to them. She says she's a relative, and they say she's not. But it has gotten so much attention. They were able to raise money. I think they got new equipment in the parks, but it's really about educating the kids and getting them whistles so that if they're out somewhere.
That's great.
Because they do believe that Nevaeh probably knew the person who took her because she was extremely shy.
Oh.
So saying she wouldn't just get in the car with someone she didn't know, or that's a theory. So, but it has brought the community together, and I think for them, they really need answers to this. And we'll see, could this be the year? The new sheriff and the technology today as
well.
Be
amazing. It just needs that little push, it sounds like, and I really hope that it's around the corner for everyone involved in to kind of start healing this community. Next, our resident true crime genius weighs in with this week's sidebar, and we will have our closing arguments.
It's time to get schooled by the teen sensation of true crime.
Here's our resident boy genius with this week's sidebar.
Hi, my name is Ryan Kester. I'm an 18-year-old pre-law junior at the University of Texas at Dallas, and ever since I was 9 years old, I've been researching cases, attending trials, and poring over thousands of pages of court and police documents, all in the name of true crime. On today's episode of Sidebar, we're going to be discussing a very hot-button issue related to the Nevaeh Buchanan murder. Specifically, the fact that Nevaeh's mother allowed her around not one, but two registered sex offenders throughout her life. I would say most people who hear about this case wonder, why would she do that, and could she face any charges related to that? And the answer as to the charges depends. If they were not involved in Nevaeh's murder, either one of them, the sex offender or the mom, obviously a prosecutor could not charge her with anything. There would be no actual legal wrongdoing there. However, if one of those sex offenders was involved in the murder, that would be very different. I want to anecdotally, really quick, talk about a recent case, and I would like to preface this by saying that the murder conviction in this case was overturned. But in Georgia, a couple named Courtney Bell and Christopher McNabb were charged with the murder of their 8-day-old baby, Kalia. And what ended up happening in that case is the prosecution alleged that Christopher McNabb had actually murdered the child, unbeknownst to Courtney Bell. But because Courtney Bell knew of his violent history, his drug use, and she did nothing to stop or separate Christopher McNabb from the baby, even though he had never inflicted violence on the baby, that she was just as culpable. She was convicted of second-degree murder. And that case was recently overturned as to the murder charge and a charge of extreme child abuse. However, Courtney Bell was still found guilty and the conviction was upheld for a conviction of child endangerment. And I think that that would be the most appropriate charge in what would likely occur in this case. If the prosecutors were able to prove that one of the sex offenders had murdered Nevaeh and that the mom had allowed her to be exposed to him, essentially what would be asked is a legal theory known as but for. But for Nevaeh being exposed via the mom to her murderer, would the murder have occurred? The answer would be no. So naturally, there would be some level of culpability and responsibility assigned to the mom. Any good defense attorney would argue that she could never have anticipated that this would happen, but any good prosecutor would counter that by saying she was still reckless or at least negligent. I think that in this case, because we don't know what happened, no charges would or should be filed. But if, on the off chance that it was one of the sex offenders that committed this offense, Nevaeh's mom would absolutely very likely be facing charges. I need to go study for my midterms, but I will see you guys on the next episode of Sidebar.
It's time for closing arguments. And for me, the one thing that stands out about this case is the fact that the police did early on in this investigation release the names of George Kennedy and Roy Smith. Did that hurt the case or did it help it? I think in knowing how law enforcement works, it's very unusual. But on top of that, I think it kind of hurt this case because now people stopped looking for the killer if they did not kill this little girl. All the attention went to them and people stopped looking to other people. We know it's someone that at least knows the Monroe area very well. And so closing argument, let's hope for justice for Nevaeh. But as a reporter, I was happy that they released the names. It gave us something new to chase, but I think it really did hurt this investigation.
You know, I'm almost on the same page with you on this one. I think that releasing suspects' names should be on a case-by-case basis because we know innocent people's lives can be ruined, and we've covered those stories when they're unfairly targeted in an investigation, when police get that tunnel vision and they ignore all the other suspects. But that's not really the case here. First of all, those closest to the victim are always persons of interest until they are ruled out. So if during that time police find evidence against you, physical or circumstantial, I don't think there's anything wrong with releasing your name because other people may hear it and come forward, and that can help the investigation, especially when we're talking about this type of crime, a little girl buried alive. We need to get whoever did this off the street. And Ronnie, you said it, when it's such a heinous crime like this and they think the person is a danger to society, then it's time to say their name. And public service announcement to end here. If you're a registered sex offender who hangs out with a single mom with a young daughter and that daughter gets murdered, police aren't going out of their way to protect your identity. And I don't think that they need to, especially when they find blood in your hotel room, in your van, or you're outside burning your porn collection after police just talked to you that day. Okay?
And with that, before we say goodbye, if we could just take a moment and remember Nevaeh, let's hope this is the year that you and your family gets justice.